Welcome to Truth Always Matters. Proverbs 29:2, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. In 1 Timothy, we're told by Paul, I exhort, therefore, that first of all supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and for all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we pray for our nation that you give wisdom to our leaders and all that are in authority over us, that they may govern in righteousness. May we as a people humble ourselves, turn from our unrighteousness, from our divisiveness, and seek your face that our land may be healed. Let not our country be polarized by political division, but united in the vision of our forefathers as a nation under God, with justice and freedom for all. Thank you for the opportunity we have to bring the inerrancy of the Bible and sound biblical doctrine to our community and apply them in our daily lives, in our loyalty to godly principles, in the marketplace, in our workplace, and in our families. May God bless our nation and its leaders. Amen.
Welcome to Truth Always Matters. I'm your host, Georgie Zendry, along with my co-host, Ed Zendry, and KKXX station manager, Andrew Palmquist. We would like to welcome our special guest today, Congressman James Gallagher. Thank you for being our guest today.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be with you guys.
Well, Congressman, you're in Chico today to talk to the community about your bill on the Representation Act, which addresses the redistricting of congressional districts on a fair representation of the people, as opposed to being a political tactic to garner favor for one party or another. But real briefly, before talking about the act, I'd like to touch on the impact that Doug Lamont is passing and you suddenly being thrust into this, what the impact's been on you and your family and your faith.
Yeah, losing Doug was a gut punch. You know, he was somebody that I admired greatly. I got my start in politics working for Doug. I worked with him very closely over the years. He was a very good man, you know, a man of faith, integrity. He was genuine. And I've always tried to, you know, learn the lessons that he taught me and you know, take that with me as I started my own role in politics. So it's been very tough. It's been a whirlwind, but I really felt the call. And I prayed over this with my wife and family, and we really felt compelled to stand up and run to fill the seat, to continue that legacy of leadership and representation here in the North State.
Well, today you had a press conference on the Representation Act, and I think that's an important remedy to a major problem throughout the United States right now. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, I mean, kind of going back to Doug, I mean, you know, he, you know, loved this place. I love this place. The North State, it's amazing communities connected by a rural lifestyle and values, by water and agriculture and resources. And, you know, with the passage of Prop 50 and then obviously losing Doug, I really felt like we've needed to fight sort of a multi-front war here on this to go out there and, one, make sure that we, you know, win this seat so that we maintain representation and have a voice, you know, for our region, but also to make sure this doesn't happen again. And so this Representation Act is really a proposal to try and stop the gerrymandering, you know, the partisan gerrymandering that's been going on across the country, and get back to, drawing the lines based on places. Every place in California, every place in America should have the opportunity to elect someone of their choice, right? And we shouldn't allow, partisan gamesmanship and parties to choose our representatives. No, in fact, the people should choose their representatives. And the best way to do that is to really ensure that we don't allow communities of interest like our own, like the North State, or like, you know, say the Central Valley or the Inland Empire, that we don't allow those to be torn apart when we do redistricting.
So also with that thought, I don't think the public understands how the redistricting not just changes the voting rights here, but it also changes the very atmosphere of the public itself. We're a conservative company, we're groups here, and it could overnight we could become liberal, democratic liberal.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, if they are successful in doing what they propose to do, Northern California will have no one represented that is actually from Northern California.
Nobody. Right? Yeah.
They will all three of those representatives be people who are from the Bay Area. Different parts of the Bay Area will represent the entire North State.
Really?
And do you think that they're going to be beholden or focused on our area? No. I mean, all their votes come from somewhere else. Right. Right. So what they did is they diluted our vote so that we don't really have a say.
Right.
And that other places will have a say.
Would that then, be like the metropolitan areas would be dictating to us?
I mean, let me give one example. Wolves, right? Wolves are devastating the cattle industry right now.
Right.
Because
the sheep
they've allowed and sheep, you know, our livestock. And, you know, if we had our way, we would say, hey, you need to delist the gray wolf. And then we need to have ability to go after bad wolves that are going, that are killing cattle.
And they
right?
could kill a child, too.
Or kill a human being. Or they're getting closer and closer to town. We, you know, but, you know, the new representative, potentially, of Northern California, that area, could be a guy named Jared Huffman, who believes in protecting the wolves at all costs. Like, who doesn't support delisting the wolf, right? Mm-hmm. Who's from Marin County. Like, he's got a very different worldview of the whole situation, right? But he gets to win. You know, their side gets to win and have their view represented while ours gets blanked out. That's the kind of thing that would happen if they're allowed to win. And that's why I'm fighting so hard to win this seat. Now, I'm running in this, you know, the first district. Mm-hmm. It has been gerrymandered, but, you know, I'm fighting really hard to represent, you know,
all
the people. And, and if I win, I'm going to be very focused on representing the North State and making sure that our voice is really heard, because no one else is going to do that.
Yeah, right? I don't think people understand that it's actually from the Oregon border to Sacramento, to the Bay Area.
Right.
And the problems in the Bay Area and Sacramento are very different from the problems that are in Siskiyou County.
Well, and they see the world very differently. Let's just be real. I mean, you know, now we have this tires thing, right? You know, where they want to ban the kind of tires that you can buy when you change out your tires. And it's going to be more expensive, hundreds of dollars more expensive because of this law. Now, people in Marin County might think this is really great. You know, we think it's better for the environment or whatever, you know, and, you know, but they don't have to drive like we do, right?
Right.
And they don't have to, you know, go as many miles. You know, they don't, you know, their economics are different. We struggle. These high costs are hard for us to pay. Let's be, you know, they're very hard for us to pay. And many people are struggling up here. And that, you know, Marin is a very wealthy place. Yeah. So they don't really know the kind of things that we have to deal with, right? They don't have to worry about wolves coming in and, you know, killing their dogs or cats or, you know, but we do, you know, our cattle, our livelihoods. And so, you know, that's why it's important. Like, look, I think Marin should have its own representative, right? It should have somebody who speaks for them. But should my people too, right? I mean, they deserve, people in Modoc deserve just as much representation as well. And what they're doing is trying to, you know, so dilute that.
So Marin County's a big county, right?
Yeah.
Lots of people. And we're smaller counties. Why did he do that?
Politics. It's so that a Democrat wins. At the end of the day, what the whole thing is about is making sure that Democrats win these seats and that they get as many seats as possible to fight Donald Trump in Washington, D.C. I mean, that is the ultimate goal that they're trying to achieve there. Now, the fundamental problem with that is then, in the meantime, people lose out on representation. You know, and they don't have the ability to have their person speaking for them, which is what this whole thing was supposed to be about. This American experiment was to have real representation, that you would have your voice speaking for you in the halls of government. And the more we do these redistricting wars and it's all about politics and party, the less people have a voice. We lose. People lose. Parties win, people lose. And I think that that's wrong. So we got to start turning the tide on that. and getting back to the fundamental American value of making sure that every place has representation.
And that's why this November is important.
It's very important.
Extremely important, particularly for our area here, that we not be complacent. Well, we've always had our representation. I don't know if people understand Prop 50, but we really want to appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to be with us, Congressman, because these are important issues. You got a busy day today.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing me on. It is very important. I encourage your listeners, please get out and vote. You know, vote like your representation depends on it, because it does, right? Okay. And like, I think it's just if everybody in our region really goes out there and votes, I think it's going to be a good result. And I know that you're also, you know, speaking to the faith of this community too. And I think that is always God goes ahead of these things. I believe that very firmly. We have to be faithful. We have to go out there and work. But I've been very prayerful throughout this whole thing. I do believe God's called me to go do this. I don't know, you know, what the result is going to be, but I know I'm supposed to do the work. And so I appreciate the job that you do in ministering to people, because there's only one person who can really make our paths straight, and that's Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. So how can our listeners pray for you?
Please just pray for endurance. It's a grind. Pray that I would be able to just speak truth into wherever I go, and pray for my family, because, you know, it's a tough thing to be able to go out there and travel around and back and forth to D.C. and all that. So lift them up in prayer, too, And I think those would be the best ways that people could pray for me, but pray that I be a good leader and a good steward of this office.
Okay. So I just, one more question here. Is there any challenges that you're facing right now that they need to be praying for?
Specifically.
I think it's just like, hey, in this redistricting, you know, like what they meant for, you know, their destruction, right? What they meant to undermine us, maybe it gets turned around on them, right? You know, they're trying to trap us, they're trying to stop, you know, they're trying to set the snares, right? We, you know, are just standing up in righteousness, saying, no, our people need a voice. Our people need, and we're fighting for righteous government and accountability, and so that would overcome, right? That would overcome sort of the evil schemes that are out there, and that what they meant would just not come to fruition, right? I mean, I think that's maybe the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we just lost Congressman Gallagher. He just left, so now it's just us. I want to welcome to the set Andrew Palmquist. He's the station manager here at KKXX. Thank you for coming on with us.
Yeah, thank you, Georgie. I don't know how you got James Gallagher to come in today, but that was really great.
That was awesome, huh?
Yeah, we need more of that. So a lot of effort and time spent scheduling, but we somehow made it work.
We made it work. You know, and he was talking about the redistricting and trying to help us to understand how serious this is to us.
Hmm.
You know, that when the government came in and with Proposition 50 and they changed all the boundary lines of how people are voting here, and who, I didn't realize that it's really and truly the Bay Area that is controlling the votes here in the state of up here in the North State now, all the way up to Siskiyou County, to Modoc County, and we the people have very little say here.
And that was the focus of his speech today, this afternoon?
It was.
Well,
yes.
That and his legislation is focused not just on, and it's pretty much bipartisan, should be considered bipartisan, because he made it really clear at his news conference that this legislation should be bipartisan. He's not directing it at what happened in Texas. He's not directing it at what happened in California, or direct whichever party was involved in these redistricting efforts for political reasons, saying it's all wrong to do it for political reasons, whether it's right or left doing it, that it needs to be done on fair representation. For instance, I think he made a point during our thing here, in the old District 1, people need to understand there's a new District 1, mm-hmm. and need to pay attention to that and be out and vote. But what he made the point, and he said, okay, if his opponent wins in November, you've got representation. It's going to be, he's well seated in Marin County, and Marin County, with the populace there, will tell you what you can do with your with the wolves situation, the problem we have with the overpopulation of wolves right now to the farmer, as opposed to those who are animal rights people not wanting to harm the poor wolves. Yeah. And then you've got a number of situations. We have issues here that deal with farming that are totally different than what over there. But so he's talking about, what he's talking about is throughout the United States, not just here, but because it's right in our face here with Prop 50, that throughout the United States, we have the redistricting surrounds the issues and the needs of that particular area, not just the political needs of either party. In other words, we have rural concerns. The Bay Area may have urban concerns, and if one, you know, probably even fair to the Bay Area, if we're in charge of the Bay Area and we're telling them how to live as we hear in the country, it's just as fair as them our fear of those that live in the urban areas telling us in the country how to live. And some of these issues are really important. That why we have a new policy and a national policy of that governs redistricting being simply on the needs of that community, and not on not because one political party is trying to outdo the other.
Well, he also talked about the new regulations coming on about you having to buy new tires every year, that they're going to try doing away with the tire facilities that sell used tires. What's funny about that is that here in the country, here in the North State where we live, we drive approximately 60 miles a day to and from Corning to here. That puts wear and tear on our tires and our cars. But somebody in the Bay Area, they might drive 10 miles a day or 5 miles a day, or they might take a bus. So those types of regulations on regulating the tire industry here in the state of California affects us here in the North State or in counties that have to drive a long distance to and from work. So do you have any thoughts on that?
When would that change go into effect, do you know?
Probably next year.
Okay. Hopefully there'll be a new governor by then.
Well, this is coming from the California Energy Commission, which is interesting.
For California.
This is a good example of what can happen to a rural area. Like Georgie said, they may only and the congressman Gallagher brought it up too, that we drive a lot more in the country just to get from one place to another. Your job may be 3 miles from your home in the city, but it's 30 miles from your home in the country, and so we drive more in tires. But what this came from the California Energy Commission, and they've approved these new rules that will phase out replacement tires that don't meet the state's energy efficient standards. The belief is of potentially wiping out 70% of the tires currently available to California drivers. This means that the even new tires that are for sale, if they don't meet this standard, can't be sold in California. So you have to have this other tire. Now, this tire, the idea is that somehow they say that, for instance, Commissioner Nancy Skinner is quoted as, if we can bring each California's gas down just a little bit, why shouldn't we? In other words, they're trying to say that these new tires will make vehicles more gas efficient and somehow. And so that's how they're justifying it. Even Gavin Newsom on this issue estimates the new rules would serve drivers he believes they would save drivers $1 billion a year, and his office declaring our opposition to it as mega hates to see it. That's an end of quote from the governor. And so, let me take my concern here. Particularly in Congressman Gallagher made a point of it, too. In Marin County, where the average annual income of a family is probably two or three times that of our area here in rural California, and they only drive maybe 5 or 10 miles a day, this is not a big imposition. But here where you drive a lot, and I'm going to give a shout-out to the quality used tire company here in Chico, along with any other used tire company here. This type of legislation will actually put them out of business. And thousands of people depend on the used tire, including us, on the used tire industry to have affordable tires. And it would bring, this would even put them out of business, and totally, because unless they somehow were going to come up with used tires that meet this new standard. And
a lot of extra layers of bureaucracy.
And more layers of bureaucracy on top of it. But it was just, it's not giving a thought to the average person on the street. And being an average retiree, I would hope that I'm average, is that this is a tremendous financial impact on us, and the amount of, particularly the amount of driving we do.
And it really comes back to the changing of the districts here in Northern in California, that right now we have the entire legislation of the state run in California is 90% Democrats right now. So they make all these laws, they make all these rules. And so what they're trying to do when they are redistricting the counties themselves, like the Butte County, County 1 here, and changing it to where now it's part of Marin County, which has, we have hundreds of thousands. They have millions there. And so what they do is they have this populist vote that comes in, and they literally change the voting here to where, okay, so Congressman Gallagher is running. And so he needs the Republican vote to remain in Congress to keep the balance of power in Congress. And it doesn't become a Democrat-run Congress then. And here in the state of California, you have those that are running for assemblyman and state assembly, and then state controller and others, and the governor of the California. So with the changing of the votes here, that means that these counties could lose the election for the state of California. That's how serious this is. And so they keep bringing these new regulations and these new laws, like, okay, we're going to do a regulations where you can't buy used tires anymore because they're not meeting our regulations on how they're, how fast they're going or how slow they're going or the friction on the road. And it could doesn't mean it does, impact your gas mileage. And these are all determinations from this Democrat state-controlled government, because they changed the lines in California to be Democrat lines. So our district has turned from a Republican district into a Democrat district.
And this is the only chance we have to change that, this upcoming election?
Well, the problem is that this redistricting is going to be a future thing. And he brought out at his conference that this isn't going to be an immediate fix to Prop 50 and the damage is done. This is just to ensure in the future that this war, this political war has been going in several states right now, is this redistricting along lines that favor one party or another. And it was interesting. There were demonstrators there, and they really didn't demonstrate today against him, because this was pretty much an issue that that probably everybody thinks is fair, that we don't have all this, what's been called gerrymandering along political lines. And so it's, I think it's a clearly a legislation that would benefit all, but it won't cure the problem now for Prop 50. It's something that would happen when redistricting comes, which normally happens after the census every 10 years.
I don't think that we understand the magnitude of it, though, because their ultimate goal is not just here. It's It's like a 100-year plan or something, like a communist 100-year plan. Because the plan here is to not have the Republican vote. The Republican are, we are a constitution republic. So they want to take it away from the states that have less population, less votes. And they want to put the votes into the popular areas where they can have the liberal votes. They're the ones that will bring in the president of the United States by the counties. Like, whenever you look at the election map on the night of election, mm-hmm. you'll look that who put in the governor was the populated areas of Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, San Diego, these places. But it wasn't the whole state of California. It's the populated area that controls it. And this is what they're wanting here. They want the populist vote to control the presidency, the Senate, the Congress, and that's what they're pushing for. And so the drawing of the lines is to ensure that happens. I know that's, like, sad.
Mm. Well, if we had some kind of a passage of the SAVE Act or a cracking down on the vote by mail that's being allowed.
Would that change it?
Yeah. If they actually verified the signatures and did the checking, then they need to do as far as citizen.
Right. Well, they need to do that, but they also need to do it where, so in the counties, okay, so we're District 1, or we were District 1. What district are we now, Ed?
Well, still District 1 in title, but it's, you've eliminated Shasta County, you've eliminated Siskiyou County, you've,
so,
and much of the rural area, you've cut even some of our western counties. I don't, but it's it really shifted District 1 and District 2 into mm-hmm. clearly blue areas. Not hardly, maybe purple, maybe dark purple, but blue.
So what would that mean?
And that shift, and that's why. We locally need to understand, don't be complacent this November, because say, oh, it's just a midterm election or whatever. It's going to be critically important to those who have lived in the previous District 1.
Two, that really means that our congressman would become a liberal. This is what we're looking at right now. Could they become a Democrat congressman and not a Republican? And it would be because they have changed the lines of voting. We were a conservative county before. Republican count, number one was a conservative. But now they're trying to turn it to Democrat, a blue, where we would be sending a Democrat then to Congress or a senator to Congress. And our vote for president would change also. It would no longer be a conservative vote. That's what that means. Doesn't so much mean the assemblymen, state assemblymen, or state senators, but it would change for the federal elections.
Now we will be inviting his opponent to come speak to us, but let me tell you a little bit about his opponent, Mike McGuire. Mike McGuire grew up in the Marin County, is very popular in Marin County, was also president pro tem of the California Senate, so he's a very powerful Democrat. And I don't think that, I think, again, I want to talk against this complacency right now. If he will draw a large percentage of the vote from the Marin County area that is now part of District 1 that wasn't part of it before. And so this is going to be an important election. And so, Congressman Gallagher is up again. We've kind of felt in the past that District 1, well, that'll fall to look how many years Doug LaMalfa had it, and before him,
Wally
Herger had mm-hmm. it for years and years and years. That may very well change this very November.
Yeah.
And so we have to. We have to, if it's something you're concerned about, and I think rather than it being necessarily a Democrat or Republican view, I take this legislation that Gallagher is doing, I think it has a real meaning to it, is that let's get this redistricting redone. Let's get this political stuff out of the way. Get the Save America Act. Get these other things that get voting back to where they should be, and not this cutthroat political stuff that's going on.
So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to bring Tua on. Welcome back to Truth Always Matters. I'm your host, Georgie Zindri, with my co-host, Ed Zindri. We have with us right now Tua Vang. He was with us when we were at Congressman Gallagher's conference, and then as we interviewed the congressman, he was here also. And you were able to present the congressman with a very valuable book that you have written.
Yes, I presented my first book, and it's probably one-of-a-kind book about the secret war in Laos. And I don't think the congressman had much knowledge about it, although from his area that he grew up in, there's some Hmong constituents in his area. So he's familiar with the Hmong, but I don't think he's familiar much about the history of the Hmong, how the Hmong ended up in this country. So that was my... My second print. They sent me two prints in advance of the shipment, and so I gave one to my father as a token of appreciation for his service. And just so fortunate today is this opportunity to meet the congressman, so I decided to present that book for him as well.
So what people may not understand, our dear friend Tua is also the importance of this book is Tua is a Hmong historian, and he has been collecting a lot of information. And this particular book is of great importance in that in his work, he was able to find photographs by the official photographer of the secret war that had never been published. And so this book is a very historically a very important book because publishes many of those photographs that have never been seen before.
That's correct. There are 241 photos in that book, and they're very exclusive, never been seen before. I spent 22 years researching, tracking down different sources, and this is the official photographer to the secret war because it was a secret. And so there were no media coverage, and so there were not many people documented. But this person was working under the direction of Bill Lair, who was the CIA that trained his special Thai force. And this individual happened to be a photographer as well. So out in the field, he was documenting the secret war. And I was very fortunate to able to locate him and have access to those photos to share. So it will be a very, very interesting book, one of a kind, that ever been published, especially publishing from a Hmong author. So that's something that's very special about this book.
Well, what I want to also bring to our listeners' attention, Tua is very special in our lives. He's been part of our work with the Hmong since he was a teenager, and he's no longer a teenager. He's got children that are teenagers. But anyway, he's been a very important part of it and has worked very diligently on the work that we did in Southeast Asia and with the Hmong people. And so we're very privileged to have him here today.
I do want to, because he is such a special person to us, and we know his history well, Tua, this book is very special to you, but there was a whole chapter way before this book that got you into writing this book. I want you to tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. So a little bit about my background before this book. I was born in 1977, 2 years after the fall of South Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. The United States withdrew, and especially I came from the country of Laos. It was a neutral country at the time. Due to its neutrality, the United States couldn't go in. There was a 1962 peace treaty regarding the neutrality of Laos. But because the communists did not honor that peace treaty, and they kept about 40,000 of the North Vietnamese troops inside Laos. So that's why the CIA have no choice but to conduct that covert operation. And that's when President Kennedy authorized the Operation Momentum to arm General Vang Pao and his tribal army. And so after the war, these tribal soldiers or secret army became the subject of persecution due to their service with the United States. And my father was one of them. And so my father was targeted. He fled to the jungle. I was just an infant. Took my mother and I, my uncle. We spent almost 2 years in the jungle of Laos running for our life before we managed to escape to Thailand and spent 8 years, almost 9 years in a refugee camp in Thailand.
Oh, wait, before you keep going on there, I want you to talk. Let him. I'm going to have him tell him his story about being taken across the Mekong River at two. He was 2 years old, by the way.
Yeah, I was almost two. Almost two. I don't remember anything, but this is from the adults, my parents and the relative that crossed the river with me. Was nearly every Hmong children, young children, were doped with opium to put them to sleep. Yes. So that they could safely cross the Mekong River without alerting the communist. And so among all the children in our group, we were doped with opium. My mother loved me so much, she didn't put enough to knock
to your
me
mom
out.
About that. Yes.
And when right before we reached the Thai shore, I woke up and I cried because of the cold water. And so we alerted the Thai, or local Thai villagers. And when we got to the Thailand side, they greeted us, and to the men, my father and them, they thought Thai were their allies, so they felt safe. And so they surrendered their weapons to the Thai, knowing that they're in safe hand. Unfortunately, they walk us away from the river into a field, and then they rob us at gunpoint. Took everything from us.
And you didn't have much. Just
no, we didn't have
carry.
Much. Barely, just some silver coin, silver bars. Those are unique and significant to the Hmong people. And they took all of that. Mm-hmm. And so by morning, we walked along the road, and that's when the villagers found us. And the Thai government direct all of the village chief to, if they come across any refugees, for them to report to immigration. So that's why the village chief report us to immigration, and we were taken to immigration.
And then you were in a refugee camp for...
So we were taken to the Nong Khai refugee camp, which is next to the river at the border, and then 4 months later, we were transferred to the V9 refugee camp, and that's where we spent a little bit over 8 years before we left for the United States.
Was that more like a concentration camp?
It's not really concentration. It's isolated. People cannot leave the camp. There were NGOs that come in there providing all sorts of vocational trainings for the refugees. But they're restricted, not allowed to travel outside of the camp. If anyone that needs to have a need to travel outside of the camp, they need approval from the Thai authorities.
So then you come to the United States, but you guys just didn't get to come to the United States. You had to have somebody sponsor you to the United States. You didn't just come to the border and cross in over the border.
Correct. No, we didn't just come to the United States for that. We were refugees. So I want to distinguish. There are all sorts of terminology we use. there you have a legal immigrant and you have illegal immigrant, and then you also have refugees and you also have others such as political, so forth. We fall into the political refugee. And so we were sponsored to this country initially. Let me touch back on a little bit about the history. Because of the secrecy of Laos, of that war, when everything fell apart, the U.S. government only appropriate funds for the South Vietnamese and the Cambodian. They left Laos out. They didn't include Laos. Until General Vang Pao came to the United States and in Washington, D.C., and that was under the Ford administration, and he was able to talk his way through for them to realize that Laos was also in the same boat as the South Vietnamese and the Cambodian. And so that's why the U.S. government allocated some of the alien number for the Vietnamese refugee to the Laos refugee. That's how the Hmong were allowed to come to this country.
Well, I'd like to back to just a tiny bit. It's not really that far back. To get across to our listeners, this idea of why you needed to escape out of Laos, because they had been the Hmong had been loyal to the United States, but we in our work over there we learned the communists had a term that they used called the American nail. And what that meant was those who fought for the United States in the secret war have what they, in their thinking, what's called the American nail in their head. And in other words, it's something that got into their genes. And so not only do we have to kill the soldiers who fought against us, or those Hmong who fought against us, but we have to kill their children and their grandchildren, because somehow this is in their genes and it's gone down. This is how serious that situation was and how dangerous it was for you and your family to get out of Laos.
Yes, so from 19, the persecution started around 1977. From 1977 to even into the 2000s, early 2000s, there had been a genocide in Laos. But the world, the international community, basically turned a blind ears and eyes on it.
They turned their back to it.
And the Lao government basically denied it. You know, they distinguish a specific zone called the Say Sibun Special Zone, and that is where it's off-limit to outsiders, and it consists of heavy military concentration, including Vietnamese soldiers in there, to hunt down these people, hunt down the remnants of the CIA secret army. And so this genocide in there has been going on for decades, but nobody seemed to pay much interest in it. And that's when, not until the fact-finding started their fact-finding mission into Laos and able to get international journalists, independent journalists in there to confirm and validate their existence.
So you were 19, right? When we were working on it back then.
Yes, yes.
You were 19. So that's where Tua got his start on his book, was when he was 19 years of age.
Or books.
Well,
and videos, so, and he's videos. Got many videos.
So when these videos from the jungle were smuggled out and I saw them, I realized, you know, even though I grew up wondering, you know, why are we here in the United States? Why were we in refugee camp? I always want to know my identity. But when I finally saw all of those videos of the genocide going on against, not against soldiers, against men, against the elderly women and children.
And babies. Don't
yes.
forget the babies.
And, yes. And so there. So that's when I got the interest. I said, I need to know more about this. And involving with the fact-finding, and I also start my research. I reach out to all sorts of available sources out there. And that's how I started my research into this, just to get to the bottom of exactly what happened and how it ended up to be the way it was.
And why you lost your country. Because, see, the Hmong people that you see here today lost their country. You have no longer a country except for America.
You know, one meeting I had with the Lao ambassador to the United States in 2010, and I told in Richmond, California, and I told him, he was very open, more transparent than the others. His English was also better. And so one thing I told him was, look, in America, we have the Japanese. They can always reference to Japan. We have the Korean. They can always reference to Korea. Even the Vietnamese, they can always reference to Vietnam. But for the Hmong, we can't reference to Laos because you guys don't want us.
At all.
At all.
Yeah.
You hated the Hmong.
I know that's true.
And so I think he's more transparent. That's why I was able to convey that message to him. But over the years, right now, because that older generation that still hold the grudge against those in the war are no longer, or at least very few are left, the new generation now is more transparent. But unfortunately, we're going to a little bit to more political. But they're transparent, but they're losing Laos, because Laos now is linked toward China, and so they're losing.
China wants it.
Okay. China wants it. Yes.
Yeah. No, the ambassador told me when we were over there. He said, "I need you to understand what's going on here." I said, yeah. I was so mad at him. Anyways,
so we're running from communists. So talk to the current topic today. You know, run away from communists, and the way I see how we are right now is we are dealing with a communist
mindset
here, yeah. in the United States, especially here in California, which we'll go into that.
Okay. Yeah.
Then you left the refugee camps. Let's go back a little bit. You left the refugee camps and you came to America with your family. What were the challenges coming to America, and what does it mean to be an American today?
It's a whole new environment, a whole new culture, a whole new world. I remember my first day of school in the fourth grade, I didn't speak a single English word.
Really?
But that first day, through the international language, I made friends with three Anglo kids. And those were my friends that I grew up with. It was very, very difficult growing up in the United States. Again, going back a little bit, not just the Hmong, the other Asian group that came to the country went through the same challenge and the same transition. Because of the secret, especially for those coming from Laos, because of the secrecy, they didn't know anything about Laos. And, you know, they would ask me, what group of people are you? And I say, oh, I'm Hmong. Initially, they thought I'm Chinese, and I said, no, I'm Hmong. Oh, so you're from Mongolia? No, I'm from Laos. And most, at that time, talking about the 80s, most Americans do not even know where Laos is. And so growing up, it was challenging locally in the community here. I spoke broken English, but I tried my best to educate the mainstream about the Hmong. And, you know, at 13, 14 years old, because most of the Hmong parents at the time did not speak English. And so we had to step in to provide interpreter for them, because there were no interpreter service at the time. So it was very difficult growing up. But I have to give credit to people in the community like Ed yourself that help us through this transition, help us to become American. And I am a better American today because of individuals like you guys. And that makes us who we are today because of the gift, the support we receive. And it is in my belief that I am who I am more better than what I, if we were to stay in Laos. And so as an American, I feel obligated to give back to our country here.
You know, in a previous broadcast, I mentioned that you had told us about you had taken your family on a trip across the United States, and I'm trying to get people to understand the importance of what you told me. You had gone from been able to travel through different states and everything else, and never got stopped at a border, never had to show your identification, never had to prove who you were every different hamlet you pass through, or every state, much less every hamlet, and how what that meant to you. And let me see if you can. I want to get that across. I know what it meant, that the freedom. We've been there and seen what it is to have somebody every mile standing with an AK-47 along the road, or traveling in from one province to another, and having to be stopped and searched, and your ID showed, and so forth, just to travel.
Yeah, let me tell two different stories to compare to my recent family road trip to the Midwest. I travel in Thailand. I travel in Laos. In Thailand, because there's a lot of illegal immigration into that country as well. And I was traveling. This was 2007. I was traveling back to visit the refugee site that we once lived. And I have Roger Arnold accompany me, and we went on that trip.
Roger Arnold's an international journalist.
Yes, he's an international journalist based in Thailand, and he's a good friend to us. And we were near the border. We were about 2 hours away from the campsite, and there was a checkpoint. And the Thai police peeked into the car, saw Roger as a white man, and saw me as an Asian man, and he could tell I'm not Thai, so he asked me to step out of the car. And the reason he asked me to step out of the car was he thought I was Korean, and there are illegal Korean, particularly North Korean, that came into Thailand too. So when I step out of the car, he asked for my passport. I handed him my U.S. passport, and I could tell he could not read English. He looked at my passport, and he sees that that's at least an American, because it has English writing on it, and so he just told us to go. I went to Laos, like you said. My first trip to Laos was 2009. Nearly every corner I turned to, there are people with AK-47, and I traveled from Vientiane to Phansawan, and there are military outposts all along the road. And I addressed that to the Lao ambassador, and I met in 2010. I addressed that. He asked if I've ever been to Laos, and I said, yeah, recently, just in just 10 months ago. And he asked how I feel about Laos. And I told him, I say, look, it's still a poor country, but that didn't bother me. What bothers me is, there's a lot of people with AK-47 everywhere I turn to. There's AK-47. I cannot tell if they are the good guys or the bad guys. I mean, I cannot tell if they're government people or they're just, you know, gangs or whatever. And so being a foreigner, if I go into your country and I see people carrying gun everywhere, I don't feel safe, because it should be safe for tourists to travel. But everywhere I go, there's people with AK-47. So that's something I convey with the ambassador as well. Now, going to my family road trip, we took 3 road trips to the Midwest. And I, as American, I when I turned 18, I naturalized to become a U.S. citizen. And my wife was born here in Wisconsin. And so we take a lot of road trips because her family still live in the upper Midwest. So we took 3 road trips, and I feel safe everywhere I go. Everywhere I go, I am as American as anybody else. I don't. Authority never questioned us. We check in a hotel. They don't. When you travel overseas, when you check in a hotel, they ask for your passport. Here, the freedom is: I make the reservation, I check in. They just make sure that I am who I am, and that's it. I didn't have any trouble with the authorities. Everywhere I go, the people are really nice, really helpful. This recent trip, we stopped by near the border of Wyoming and Nebraska, and just so happened we're taking photos, and this man walked up to us and offered to take our family photo, because I was taking photo of my kids and my wife. So he offered to take a family photo for us. And I have a conversation with him, and he's from Lincoln, Nebraska. But he never heard of the Hmong. And I told him, I said, I don't blame you, because of the secrecy, I'm pretty sure 80% of the American people do not know who the Hmong are. the Hmong are started making visible to the national stage when Sunisa represented the United States and took the gold medals from the Olympic. And that's how then the Hmong start surfacing. But before that, nobody really know the Hmong, mm-hmm. except here in California, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and other states where the Hmong are settled in. So it was a very pleasant trip. Everywhere I travel, I feel safe. It's just very peaceful. And that's the great thing about this country is it's free to travel as long as you are a law-abiding citizen. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, there's the Hmong people here in the United States have, gosh, they're doctors and lawyers and psychologists and every profession now. Because General Vang Pao, the leader of the Hmong community here in the United States, insisted his people assimilate into the United States.
Yeah, one thing about General Vang Pao is, and this is because of my research, he believed that if the Hmong were given opportunities, they could learn to be anything. Mm-hmm. And that's why
they're smart.
That's why in 1964, when the CIA asked him, can the Hmong learn to fly? He said, oh, yeah, they can learn to fly and do anything. And the Hmong actually learned to fly and became legendary as a fighter pilot in the 1960s. Here in this country, we've been here, this marks our 51st anniversary since we left Laos. And there's a lot of successful Hmong here in the United States, millionaires. You're talking about Hmong are millionaires. And you were to compare that to the other Asian group because the Vietnamese were very, very economically sufficient in Vietnam. And they had the money. They just came over. The Hmong, you're talking about coming from the mountain. And
they came with nothing.
Nothing. So we came with nothing. We had nothing. And we start from scratch. And I think the Hmong has to... it's a little roller coaster up and down, but the Hmong has been very successful in this country.
Made a real impact. Are still avid anti-communists.
Anti-communists. And, you know, for 50 years, we have Hmong. You know, we have the first Hmong mayor in Elk Grove, California. We have the first Hmong state senator in the state of Minnesota. There. So, you know, we are evolving. And I think giving the next 50 years, like I told my kids, giving the next 50 years, hopefully we see a Hmong working at NASA going out in space. That's something that our parents and grandparents never envisioned.
Yeah.
We promised you an opportunity because Congressman Gallagher had mentioned the new tire regulations here coming in California. And I think you mentioned you had really something to say about that. Before we close.
Yeah, look, for the Hmong, we ran away from communism. In the communist system, they control everything. You do as they say, do as they told. And so being an American who grew up in this country with this new regulation that they sign off to buy specific tires for so-called energy efficient, it feels like this state government is leaning toward communism, where eventually they're taking away our liberty, so we'll no longer have our liberty, and that's where, especially for the refugee that left Southeast Asia, we fled because our liberty is being taken away. So this is very important to understand that the way this current state political agenda is doing is shifting California to a communist state, where they are taking our liberty and our happiness away. And the way I see it, because these people that make these decisions do not live with the people. They live in mansions. And so the people that are paying the price are the ordinary citizen like us. And based on my experience, particularly coming from the Hmong community, and this could speak very well for the rest of the Southeast Asian community, is a lot of family cannot afford these newer tires. I mean, I try very hard to buy Michelin tires, right? But with this regulation, those Michelin tires going to be, they're going to add at least a quarter more or half to the price. And there's no way even myself cannot afford those tires.
I want to thank Tua for being our guest today. Thank you. And also thank Congressman Gallagher and Andrew and Ed and all of us that brought this show to you today. May God richly bless you and keep you in the palms of his hands, and we will see you next week.